Kid Falcia, welcome to Village Oak Tree for August 7, 2024. I'm your host, Terrence O'Donnell, and I thank you for joining me once again. So it's been a wild week all over the U.S. and all over the world, for that matter. U.S. politics, wars in the Middle East, Ukraine escalating, and so much else. So let's dive in as I bring my perspective on things right now and for the near future, if things keep going the way they are. So let me kind of roll through here. You know, I've been gathering my thoughts in news stories and everything else now for last week, reading and watching the news, watching YouTube videos, news videos, and things are pretty grim right now. Trump is practically foaming at the mouth at his rallies, trying to convince enough voters to put him back in the White House. But it's nothing new. His tirades at rallies have gotten some notice, and not in a good way. He's fast becoming a sideshow cult figure and losing ground slowly. And that may pick up speed over the next couple of months. Beyond the usual outright lies that we're all used to by now, his racist, misogynistic remarks disparaging Harris are all he appears to be able to manage now, and more rational voters are starting to drift into the Harris queue. Meanwhile, as the world knows, Harris has picked a VP, Governor Tim Walz of Minnesota. He's a retired Army National Guard Command Sergeant Major. And for those around the world who don't know who that is, he's like the highest ranking enlisted that you can get in the United States Army. He's a former high school social studies teacher and a football coach. He appears to be the perfect balance for Harris, who needs all the help she can get in such a short amount of time. The MAGA cult's unraveling fast now. Donald Trump is scrambling as usual and doesn't have a plan, nor will he listen to anyone of substance, unless you feed him a lot of money. This is a good thing about this, you know, but the citizens of the U.S. are nowhere close to seeing the conclusion to all this chaos. I think there'll be a lot more stupidity in the next couple of months. Will only continue to put more nails in the coffin lid of the MAGA cult and the current ideation of the Republican Party. The question Americans should be asking themselves, what's likely to happen to all these MAGA cultists that worship Trump like a second coming of some mythical savior? Democrats don't seem to have a plan to address their needs. This means that they will go looking for another to replace Trump over the next 4 years. It seems that the U.S. is in a vicious cycle of wash, rinse, repeat every 4 years now until these societal issues are addressed. Mostly the economic ones. It's pretty basic. If you fix the economy so that the majority of the people have stable jobs and a living wage, the other problems will move to the back of the queue. Everyone else across the world is watching Kamala Harris closely to see what she's going to say and do. She has a very thin line to tread in order to keep her corporate donors and win over enough voters to propel her into the White House come November. Trump is starting to lose ground in the polls, and as she has closed the gap, can she climb past him? Well, right now, they're running about neck and neck. The world wants to know because, if you ask most people on the street or around the world, the democracy of the United States is on the line. Most people still think the United States is a democracy. As I've said in previous podcasts, the United States did away with that representative liberal democracy decades ago. It's a republic with an oligarch-style government, much like ancient Rome was just before and during the fall of that empire. The U.S. government works very hard on their propaganda message that the U.S. is the world's beacon for freedom and democracy. It's all bullshit. Senator Bernie Sanders made a speech on the Senate floor last week calling out this turn towards oligarchy. He asked Congress to wake up and stop this, but it sounds like that went on deaf ears. Maybe a few more congressional colleagues were to get on board with that message. The truth is, I don't think the U.S. can be saved in its current form right now. As one writer wrote last week in a post, democracy has been a facade to keep up appearances, giving the illusion that voters actually have a say in who gets elected to their legislative positions. It's the billionaires and giant corporations who elect the U.S. presidents and congressional leaders, not the voters. Once a candidate is selected by the rich donors, party affiliation has no bearing. Voting by the masses is just an exercise to keep the people believing that they have a say in their government. Keeps them from revolting, so they think. And that's the thing, and I've said this before. If we as the people want to make change, we're going to have to revolt in one fashion or another. Now, violence never solves anything, but we really need to let these people know that we're really angry with them. This whole business of trying to shut down the Green Party of Jill Stein is a good example. She can't get any mainstream news coverage unless something bad happens, like when they arrested her at a pro-Palestine rally in St. Louis, Missouri, a couple of months ago. She's now making the rounds of podcasts from outside the U.S. to get her message across that she is a common-sense alternative. She wants to make that phone call to shut down the Israeli dogs of war. She wants to stop the arms shipments to Ukraine. She wants to roll back the tariffs and stop the trade wars with China and everyone else. But she's bad for corporations, CEOs, and corporate business owners in the U.S. They see her as an existential threat. So their political lackeys and the other two dominant parties are using some of their millions in corporate donations to shut her down. And much the same for Cornel West. Tom Hartman said in his article from last week, the oligarchs don't want to stir up the people enough to start a rebellion. So they do everything they can to shut down or strangle labor unions. They criminalize everything they can, fund the overcrowded private prison system, and militarize the urban police forces to try and stop the people from exercising their First Amendment rights. I've also said this before in previous podcasts, that people in the United States do not have freedoms of the press, the freedom to peaceful protest against the government, freedom of speech, and so on, as outlined in the First Amendment. People can say things as long as they're not overly critical of the government's policies, which changes depending on who the U.S. is waging war against at any given time. Remember all the protests that we tried to do in late 2002, 2003, that got shut down? We had the other, a couple other protests, and the latest one, the pro-Palestine protest, the peaceful ones, sit-ins on the campuses, and look what the government did to those. Those are all good examples of how we do not have First Amendment rights here. Right now, the U.S. government is punishing Americans for publicly speaking out against Israel and Jews. And I say this because we just had another Democratic primary here yesterday, and the incumbent lost due to AIPAC. They came in and threw millions of dollars and gave it to her opponent, and she got voted out because she protested what's going on in Gaza. The mainstream media is only allowed to publish stories that are approved by the government, which changes every 4 years, depending on what the wars are like. The independent media has to watch their backs in case of the U.S. government decides to come after them, Julian Assange being the latest lesson in recent history. Voting in the United States is not exactly a right. It is regulated by each state. There are several amendments to the U.S. Constitution that grant people the privilege to vote, but the standards that allow a person to vote in each state vary from state to state. There have been several Voting Rights Acts passed in the last few decades, but all they have done is eliminate racial discrimination and enforce the 15th Amendment. And as we can see in a lot of the southern and Midwest states, those are not being enforced right now. Voter suppression is alive and well in the United States with gerrymandering, purging, and draconian voter ID laws directed mostly at minority areas and Democrat Party-leaning voting districts in Republican states. The U.S. is the only country like this. All other declared democracies in the developed world have it written into law, and it's a right for the citizens. In the case of Australia, you can even be punished for not voting. A lot of immigrants and the children of immigrants have become fed up with the lies, and they're leaving. A lot of Americans, period, are leaving. The American dream is just that, a figment of the imagination, or a very bad dream, depending on how you look at it, and they haven't figured out. Same goes for green card holders, and naturalized citizens. A lot of them are going back to their countries or somewhere else to chase that dream of freedom and prosperity. They have found out that they most certainly won't find any of that in the United States anymore. I have another blog article from one of my favorite satirical writers who lives in Northern California. He wrote about the fires and how they're pretty bad right now. But until they actually start burning people's neighborhoods, people are heading out to the local parks to watch the fire spectacles. Much like the latter days of the Roman Empire, when the games in the Colosseum had to be ramped up constantly, as the sick boredom of the citizens couldn't be slaked anymore. Kind of like that here in the United States. The United States is finding itself ever closer to become more of a participant in Israel's war of aggression. They're also trying really hard to whip up fear in the Pacific region towards China, telling its allies that China is coming for them all. The U.S. just made a deal with Japan to upgrade the command structure in Yokosuka in order to manage the perceived threat from China. Just to be clear, there is no military threat from China, but the U.S. still wants everyone to be afraid, be very, very afraid. It's in their best interest, the military-industrial complex, that is, to keep that fear threshold high. The military arms industry is about the only industry the U.S. has left anymore, since most of the other heavy industries left for better scenery and lower costs. Free trade wasn't good enough. The corporations had to have it all with labor exploitation in other countries as well. Their bottom line is all that matters to them, which is why they donate millions to political candidates for even more profit squeezed from the American citizens. The U.S. just sent the Philippines $500 million last week for military funding. You know what that's for. It will be used to build up the new temporary U.S. bases that the Philippine government was coerced into allowing to provide logistics to be used against China. They say logistics or supply bases, but anyone with half a brain knows better. Of course, we won't hear about that for a few weeks or months. So much for freedom of the press. There is so much happening outside the United States so fast these days, it's a little hard to keep up with it all, especially in the Middle East. Last week, someone's missile landed in a football field in Golan Heights, northeast of Israel, which is technically Syrian territory, although the United States and Israel would say different. The Druze people are Syrian Arabs. The Arab missile killed several children playing football, and the Israeli government went into their usual ranting and gnashing of teeth mode and promised retribution. So they sent a missile into a Beirut suburb, killing a senior Hezbollah leader. They assassinated a senior Hamas leader in Tehran as well, with what was being described as a short-range projectile. In other words, an anti-tank or RPG, which is making the whole world a lot more tense over a possible escalating regional war. Everybody's waiting to see what Iran's going to do. Well, you know what? They may have already started, because an American base over there in Syria, or in Iraq, it was in Iraq, just got hit. It was pretty minor, but we still, American soldiers did end up in the hospital. So it could be more of that coming. I wonder how they knew exactly where these people were. Does this remind anyone of the recent incident in Damascus back in April when Israel bombed the Iranian embassy to take out someone they didn't like? What about the senior Hamas leader that were supposedly taken out in Gaza with air missile strikes that also took out hundreds of civilians as collateral damage? The U.S. is trying to stop an escalation by talking to Hezbollah and Iran into not retaliating, which is being rejected. I can't imagine why. How about talking to Israel? Of course, that's like trying to calm down a rabid dog that's growling and barking at you. Besides, Israel owns a large portion of the United States government now, so it wouldn't matter if they did say anything. Which brings me to another news story that broke in the independent news feeds, that Israeli citizens rioted to stop the arrest of IDF soldiers accused of raping and torturing Palestinian prisoners, and government leaders advocated for using rape as a form of torture of Palestinians. They want to execute the excess prisoners with a bullet to the head. How are these not subhuman animals? I'm talking about the Israelis. Seems that what everyone is saying outside the U.S. is right. With the U.S. enabling them, Israel can do whatever depravities they want to the Palestinians with impunity, because the U.S. is covering for them. Given recent U.S. history, this should not come as any surprise. Here are other news stories that just came out last week. Secretary of Defense Austin revokes the plea deal with the accused 9/11 plotters for no death penalty. So a little history for those who have forgotten or are too young to know. This bit of history is probably not being taught in current U.S. history classes. Back during the first years of the so-called Global War on Terror, as coined by then-President George W. Bush, he authorized the CIA and their special forces detachments to capture those people around the world that might have had a hand in the 9/11 attacks. When they captured these people, they were whisked off to CIA interrogation sites set up in foreign countries that allowed them to do so, so-called black sites. See, torture is against the law in the United States and the EU. So they took these men to places in North Africa, the Middle East, and Africa, and tortured confessions out of them, then locked them up in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, at a U.S. Navy Marine base without charges or designation as enemy combatants, no POW status, so they could get around the International Court in The Hague. In other words, no Geneva Convention rights. George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Rumsfeld, and all the others are by textbook definition war criminals. The U.S. is a rogue nation by this definition. Not a lot different than a lot of other countries like Nazi Germany, Serbia, Libya, and other Central African countries that their citizens and governments committed atrocities like genocide and torture. The United States government has done all it can to try and make the world forget about that past, but they remember. They are looking at Israel and seeing a small rogue nation that's just like a little brother to the United States. So as Israel keeps getting away with all of its barbaric crimes against humanity, the world knows where they got the idea from, especially since they see how much the U.S. is providing protection and diplomatic cover for them in the U.N. and the world courts. The United States should have been charged with war crimes years ago, but we all know how that worked out. Now a reckoning is coming. As Israel continues its barbarity and the U.S. keeps covering for them, they are being more and more isolated by the rest of the world. In this case, the other countries are using economic isolation rather than military might. Rather ironic, since the United States has the most economic sanctions levied against countries and individuals than any other country in the world. According to one noted economist, over 15,000. No other superpower is doing this. In his interview on a very popular Brazilian podcast last week, the only people being hurt by this are the ordinary citizens in all of these countries, especially in the U.S. An issue is whether the U.S. will start taking a more active role in the war over there at the request of Netanyahu, as per his recent address to the U.S. Congress. Excuse me. There's a lot more rhetoric making the media rounds that the U.S. may help Israel with Lebanon if things get out of hand. We better hope not. As of last weekend, the U.S. has diverted a carrier group to the eastern Mediterranean Ocean to be on standby in case of trouble. It only means one thing, supporting Israel. If Israel jumps into Lebanon, will a carrier strike force provide air cover for Israeli planes? I doubt they will actually participate in any offensive, but they could protect the airspace from surface-to-air missiles and drones while Israel carpet bombs Lebanon. So another thing to add to this is that the U.S. has deployed stealth bombers over to Qatar, and they're sitting on the tarmac over there waiting to take off in case anything really happens over there. The other part of this is the Russians have been running supply planes, almost near constantly from Russia down to Tehran, dropping off military equipment and supplies. So something's coming. Nobody knows what it's going to be yet. I watch a lot of news videos sent out by the Hamas brigades on how they're conducting the war in Israel, and it doesn't look good for the IDF. They're losing mechanized and ground infantry assets far more than they can replace, and far more than what they're saying in the media, so I doubt they have anything to run a ground offensive with. Not enough troops, tanks, or armored personnel carriers, as Hamas has been steadily taking them out. Hezbollah is posting drone footage on social media on their ability to photograph Israeli military airfields, infrastructure, and other assets. If Israel does start a bombing campaign against Lebanon, Hezbollah will flatten Israel. It will take out its military installations, basic infrastructure such as electric grid and water installations and so forth, much like what IDF is doing in Gaza. Israel's so-called Iron Dome has already been proven that it's not so iron after all. Even with U.S. help, Israel can't stop Hezbollah, and they know it, but they aren't going to admit that in public. You just have to know that the Israeli Defense Force leaders and some of the not-so-rabid Israeli politicians also know this. But can they stop the rabid war dogs from destroying Israel? Probably not. The U.S. doesn't have the industrialized military capacity to supply them anymore. Of course, that's not making it much in the news either. They can barely keep up with the demand for bullets and artillery and ammunition, not to mention substandard equipment to shoot them with. But you don't hear about that. Again, you don't hear about that in mainstream news. You might pick it up if you dig deep enough. The war in Ukraine is nearly over due to attrition. Ukraine has run out of troops, and all the munitions and equipment in the world won't help if there's no soldiers to operate them or shoot the guns. The long-awaited, much-vaunted U.S.-made F-16s have finally made it to Ukraine. They were given these. Now, you got to understand, these are out-of-date airplanes given to them by the Denmark. So 20 F-16s that are nearly 40 years old with a few upgrades are not going to stop any of the latest and greatest Russian fighter jets. So how long before they start getting shot down? Russia is gaining more and more territory every day. And there are even rumors that there may be a peace deal in the offing, but again, that's just rumor. And that probably got quashed. Ukraine has crossed the Russian border into Kursk here in the last couple of days, creating a refugee situation, and Russia is rushing reservists to stem the attack. I have to wonder what that will accomplish. Russia is saying that this is a major provocation. Ukraine doesn't have the manpower for a sustained incursion. So what happens next? Well, without troops, I'll let you make the educated guess. That isn't stopping the U.S., who will pull out of every nuclear arms treaty they made with Russia now, and have recently decided it would be a good idea to set up amid the long-range nuclear tip missiles in eastern Germany and maybe western Poland. Of course, Russia did the tit-for-tat measure by installing short- to mid-range nuclear tip missiles on their western borders. These idiots in Washington, D.C. apparently think that a return to the Cold War is a good idea for them. Someone is making money from this on the American side, but what about the rest of the world? Do they even care? The United States must have a smug look, as it must be thinking how safe they are across the oceans. If Russia fires, it'll be the Poles and the Germans who'll get wiped out, and they're expendable as long as Russia goes down. These are the useless idiots the Americans have elected to represent them in Congress. They have this ideology that the U.S. must retain its world dominance at any cost. And I mean any cost. Everyone else in the world is expendable. I want to take this minute to explain how you can support this podcast and tell you about my book. This podcast is free to subscribe to on all the major mobile podcast apps, on my YouTube channel, Crown of Biha. For the first 30 days on my Substack page, Crown of Biha, the Tree of Life, at Substack.com. With that in mind, I'm asking for donations of any amount. I decided that I would rather ask for donations instead of charging subscriptions, so everyone has an opportunity to watch or listen to this podcast everywhere in the world. All I'm asking for is help in defraying the cost to produce and distribute this podcast and maintain my website. I've set up a donations tab on the Village Oak Tree webpage at rss.com and on my website at www.crownofbiha.com. Link to PayPal for your security. This way you can use any currency you wish from around the world, providing PayPal is available to you. Now, let me tell you about my book. It's entitled The Fugitives in a New United States, which can be found at major online book retailers around the world, such as Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Lulu, and many others. It's available in hardcover, paperback, and digital ebook form. You can also buy a hardcover or a paperback edition from me directly through the bookstore page on my website. This is a fictional story about what the United States might look like by 2031 under an authoritarian religious government. It's full of drama, action, and romance, but I wrote it for young adults and older, so it's safe. Look for Fugitives in a New United States at your favorite online book retailer, and I hope you enjoy it. I appreciate your time and support, no matter how you choose to do so, and I thank you very much for taking the time out for me. In other domestic news, AI is starting to gain attention again in political circles over a tweet that went viral with a video of Kamala Harris with a voiceover using AI. Could this be an escalation of the fake news being used against politicians? If we thought the Russian troll farms of 2016 were wrong, what will happen when, and I say when, not if, more of this type of media starts showing up? No one seems to be coming up with a defense for us yet. Could AI seriously sway a large amount of voters like the fake Facebook and Twitter accounts in 2016? So not only do the voters have to worry about whether voting for Harris will offer any change from the Biden policies or the fear of a Trump, administration turning the United States into an authoritarian oligarchy, they now have to worry about AI being used to influence elections. But I refer to everyone to what I said in the beginning of this commentary. The voters in the U.S. have very little say in who will be elected to office anymore. So I think AI will have little effect on any real elections, but it could still influence a lot of uninformed voters. Some possible good news from the EU with regard to AI. Their new laws went into effect on August 1st. Good for them. Maybe some of that will drift over to the U.S. eventually. There are some independent news stories talking about how the CIA is involved with trying to get rid of Maduro down in Venezuela. The U.S. is backing his opposition, supposedly, and possibly pushing the current riots over possible election fraud. What better way to stage a coup than to throw out a bunch of propaganda that Maduro cheated his way to the presidency? Venezuela was already in economic trouble before due to his governance, likely created by the U.S. As usual, when they don't like someone, especially someone like Maduro, who has stood up to the U.S. a lot since he first came to power, they send in the CIA to start trouble from the shadows. The United States doesn't like lesser countries who dare to stand up against them. How dare they? Of course, Venezuela having a lot of oil, they have a lot to do with that. Maduro has tried to use his oil as leverage with the United States in the past by nationalizing the oil industry there. And that didn't sit well with the American oil industry, who cried to the U.S. Congress numerous times since 2013 to intervene on their behalf. What better outfit than the CIA to work behind the scenes once again in South America to get what the U.S. wants? The United States never seems to learn its lessons from their failures of the past. It doesn't look good for the opposition now, as the military defense secretary is standing behind Maduro. This is the Venezuelan defense secretary. They just need to kick out the gringos and be done with it. Tell the U.S. and its European lapdogs to go home. Leave them alone. Nothing matters to the rich elitists in the U.S. International law is only for everyone else. It doesn't apply to Americans, especially rich Americans, or their bought and paid for politicians. Something the U.S. has been flaunting for a long time, especially since last October. You can see how that's working out for them now. The U.S. has become a pariah amongst other nations of the world, especially in the global South. Trust is disappearing rapidly as the global South is signing up for a relatively new BRICS alliance. It won't be much longer before the U.S. and what allies it has left, maybe only Israel, are isolated and broke unless they change the way they do business around the world. Given the two presidential candidates being foisted on the American public right now, it doesn't look like things will change much. The voters have a choice between an isolationist oligarch who only wants to trade if it benefits him personally, or an inexperienced Democrat who may be there just for show. The real power behind the throne will keep things the same because it benefits them, not the American voters. It looks like the Democrats are starting to cede and pushing VP Harris into the White House. She has won enough delegates ahead of the DNC in August to be the Democrat nominee. She keeps raking in millions of donations, and with the popularity of this change, along with her popular running mate, they look pretty strong so far. This may continue as Trump and J.D. Vance keep shooting themselves in the foot. Most of these same failed policies will just keep the U.S. on its current downward trajectory. Again, the question is being raised amongst the voters. Will VP Harris be able to implement the changes the voters are demanding, like abortion rights, as she has stated in recent speeches? The biggest question is whether she will stand up to the Israeli lobby and tell Israel to stand down or they're cut off. The majority of the U.S. Congress seems to be very opposed to that, given Netanyahu's speech last week. Will she stand up for the voters or cave to her mega donors? There might be riots in the streets if she gets elected and it's discovered that she lied to everyone to get elected. If she's as clueless as some of the media say she is, the U.S. is going to be in bigger trouble than before. How will she handle massive nationwide protests? Is she going to take a page out of Hillary Clinton's playbook and bring down an authoritarian response? How will she handle the economic recession that's coming? I bet she isn't even thinking about that right now. And because she got other things to worry about. She has Joe Biden's economic team of Powell and Yellen to handle a gaslighting while she campaigns. With the global stock market suffering a major reset last weekend, there are reports that global investors lost over $1 trillion with this crash. The markets have stabilized for now, but the losses are still there. All because Japan decided to raise their interest rates last Friday. Goes to show everyone just how globally interconnected the world's markets are, and the U.S. should pay attention instead of imposing tariffs. There are stories starting to come out that VP Harris may be deviating from the Biden lane a little bit, but she needs more time to get a message out to everyone. Whatever her message will be, she's running out of time. As a part of that failure, we can expect more protests, draconian authoritarianism from the military's police, more violence as people get fed up and lash out, and economic ruin. Then we have the real possibility of a military draft call up for duty in the Middle East soon. Is the United States going to send out squads of soldiers and special police to grab draftees off the streets like they're doing in Ukraine right now? I mean, it might be what it's going to take if they're going to plus up the ranks, because nobody wants to join the U.S. military anymore, or they can't meet standards. I don't know about all of you, but I'm getting pretty concerned for the safety of the people in the U.S. I had to admonish someone close to me last week when she accidentally left the house without any kind of identification. We weren't going anywhere where she needed to show anyone anything. But all it takes now is for one aggressive police officer to decide to pull someone over for any reason, perceived or not. And the next thing a person knows, they're being arrested for being an illegal alien without any ID, to be proven otherwise at great expense, despite the ID being at home. In the United States now, if you're not a white, native-born citizen, you are out and about, and you're out and about, you are more likely to be detained by police for something. And if you left your government ID at home, Homeland Security will be notified that they have a possible illegal alien in custody without any identification on them. That person could be subject to deportation, even though they have a valid green card or they are a valid naturalized citizen. It does happen, mostly in the southern border states or so-called red states, but it does happen. I don't live in one of those states, but I used to. So now I caution anyone living in the United States to never leave home without some sort of government ID. That little thing could be the difference between life and death in some parts of the United States. If Trump is elected to the White House again, it will become even more important once he sends his militias around the country to round up all the millions of illegal immigrants supposedly hiding in every state. Anyone who's living in the U.S. that immigrated to the United States in the past will come under scrutiny, maybe even rounded up just because they don't like you. Papers can mysteriously disappear. Again, this stuff happens all the time now, but if Trump gets elected again, they will have the backing of the new government and the conservative courts to make it legal. When I say this stuff would happen right now, this is the kind of stuff that's happening in Texas and Arizona and in other places like Florida. Again, you know, if you look like an illegal immigrant, you can be rounded up quickly and they can lose your paperwork. And next thing you know, you're in one of those deportation centers trying to find a lawyer. This won't happen to just the poor folks from Central and South America. With all the undocumented Chinese refugees coming across the southern border now, anyone with an obvious foreign accent or cultural differences will all become targets. Remember, Donald Trump thinks that unless you immigrate from Western Europe with a satchel full of cash or a famous millionaire, you must be coming from a shithole country and you need to go back to where you came from, especially if you have brown or black skin. This despite illegal immigrants coming across the southern border now in some of the lowest numbers in a long time. The fear-mongering from the MAGA cult is still front and center because they think it will generate a lot of votes. Their strategies haven't changed in the last 8 years, or even longer. With the race riots taking place in the UK right now, Britain and Belfast, Northern Ireland, respectively, I have to wonder if their American cousins are thinking about starting their own little riots to attack the Muslims and dark-skinned immigrants. Could something be brewing for later? Maybe if Harris and company win the election in November? Then, in yesterday's news, comes this story of a very Republican Nassau County, New York State. This is they have passed an ordinance banning the wearing of any facial masks that hide the face, as they are afraid of pro-Palestinian protesters there. Forget about COVID. Being afraid of pro-Palestine protesters is apparently more existential for these people. Will this start a new trend? North Carolina passed a contentious law like this not long ago, but that one got pulled back. Between airborne viruses killing people left and right still, climate warming causing vast forest fires and flooding, creating climate migrants moving to safer places on the globe, white people are scared of pro-Palestinian protesters and dark-skinned immigrants. I think we have more important things to be scared of, but you can't tell these ignorant people that. They have reverted back to that primitive part of the brain that says fight, flight, or freeze. The United States is in deep trouble, and they keep burying themselves in the mud deeper and deeper every week. I don't think anyone can get them out anymore. The only small chance they have is to vote in a near clean slate of legislatures with common sense who will actually do the will of voters in their districts instead of their own self-interest. But between all the disinformation campaigns happening on all the social media platforms, censorship, and fear-mongering from the politicians, it doesn't look good. As some people have responded to a couple of articles lately, maybe we should just let it all go and pick up the pieces when it's all finished. So with that note, I'm going to read to you another chapter from Michael Campy's Dystopian Future once again. This, again, the title is The Priest, formerly known as Bob. This is part 7. The Kid and the Killer. Number 5 on the list of the top 10 weirdest things about the apocalypse was the strange way that things more appropriate to the new world replaced old and no longer valid things from the old world. I've been noticing the veneer of civilization chipping off for a while, but some bits stayed around long after they ceased to have value, like me trying to figure out a way to profit off the end of the world. There was absolutely no reason to make money as we knew it. It had no value, but for some reason it stuck in my head that I needed to make money. Then there were the things that just showed up like a package from Amazon that you didn't remember ordering. When it came, I would ask myself, did I order this? I don't remember ordering it. Maybe I ordered it, and then with all the craziness of the last few years, I just forgot. Then I had to ask myself if I did order it, and there were no more Amazon drivers, no more Amazon, and I was 400 miles away from where I had been if I ordered anything, and Western civilization had collapsed, how did it get here? Then I had to ask myself if this was one of those things that had nothing to do with Amazon and everything to do with my somewhat fragile psychological situation. This is what I was pondering as I planned my first road trip from Jerome to Sedona, a 27-mile jaunt, to shop for some art to decorate my home. I thought it was time to try out the bicycle I had found. That should get me there, give me time to look around, and get me back before the sun came up. I remember there was a gallery on the road just a little north of town. The retail part of the store was upstairs, and the people who ran the gallery and made the art lived in a cave downstairs that they had converted into a house. It was open on one side and overlooked Oak Creek, and the living part was carved into the mountain. I remember liking the cave and wanting to move there, and I remember liking their paintings. If the Verde Valley was anything like Jerome, then no one had intended to stay gone for too long, and they hadn't taken a bunch of stuff with them. But once they left and it got hotter and more dangerous, they just stayed away. This is one of those this area is one of those places that had been on the list of the best places to retire and the best quality of life and that sort of crap, none of which had taken into account the collapse of Western civilization. I can't imagine what it must have been like for the doddering old lawn bowlers to have to face a migration type of situation. I wondered if there were any desiccated retirees preserved for posterity in their big comfortable homes. I grabbed my stick and grabbed my hat and headed down towards the flats. You could build up a real head of steam coming down a mountain on a bicycle. No matter how good the bike is, it's not going to stop very quickly unless you smash it into something or take a fall. The reason I mentioned the stopping thing is that as I came around a turn near the bottom of a hill, the last thing I ever expected to see was right in the middle of the road, and I crashed the bike. I don't think I would have been more surprised if there was a unicorn staring at me. There wasn't a unicorn, though. There was a man standing there. He was naked, and a little naked boy was kneeling in front of him. He looked up at the noise, saw me, and smiled like he expected me to approve of his actions. It was one of those weird kind of male things where one guy will automatically assume that another guy just buys into all the shit, and I guess a lot of times they do share a moment. I have never been one of those guys that wanted to share shit with other guys, or with anyone really, but especially guys. Even before the crash, I had decided that most of them were fucking perverts or twisted sex fiends. All sorts of thoughts went through my head as I picked myself up from the street. I wondered if there were people who were genetically predisposed to kill other people and not feel anything one way or the other. I was wondering about this because I had never killed anyone, even though I had in the past met people I wanted to kill, and I certainly wanted to kill this guy. Was there a flaw in my programming? Had the stress of the apocalypse corrupted my hard drive? Were the feelings that I was having, being attracted to bad situations or tragedies, and wondering if I wanted to run away, watch, or participate or a regular part of the apocalypse mindset? I picked up my stick and set the bike upright, and then swung the stick at his head. He ducked a little, and the stick hit his shoulder, but before he could recover, I swung again and smashed his teeth. Blood spurted out, and he tried to get up, but tripped on his pants, and I swung the stick again, and he toppled over on his side, bringing his hands up to protect himself. It didn't work, because my next strike broke his fingers, and then I finally found out what it meant when people say they see red. I literally saw red. By the time I started to come down, there was nothing left of the guy's head. I dropped the stick and puked all over myself. The little boy was standing there with nothing on, staring at the broken, bleeding man and lying in the street. I turned to him and said, "You got any clothes?" He pointed down into the ditch by the side of the road. "Why don't you put them on?" I said. He scrambled down into the ditch and slid into a pair of overalls and a pair of shoes that looked to be made out of multiple layers of cardboard held together with duct tape. While he was getting dressed, I looked around for the man's clothes and saw them hanging on a bush. And if it wasn't bad enough that the bastard was raping a little kid, it was a fucking priest. The more things change, the more they stay the same. The damn world's going to hell in a handbasket. I stripped off my own clothes, which were admittedly somewhat threadbare, and now covered in puke, and put on the priest's clothes. We were about the same size, and they felt pretty good, almost clean compared to my old ones. His shoes were better than mine, too, so the walking would be easier. The little boy came up out of the ditch and stared at me. "Are you a priest, too?" he asked. "I guess I am now," I said. And that's all I have for you. That's what I've got here on this Wednesday. As I said, I'm kind of keeping track of everything going on around the world. I'm waiting for things to blow off up in the Middle East and see what's going to happen over there. I'm too old to be a soldier anymore on active duty or anything. And, you know, at my age, I'll be one of the last ones that I'll ever get called up. You know, they got to be overrunning the country before they'll call me up. So I'm not worried about that part, but I know some people who are young enough. I have a son who's young enough to be called up. So yeah, there are issues with this and issues with everything else going on. So think about all the things that I gave you today. Watch the news as much as you can. Stay away from all the idiots on Fox News and other like-minded channels. And for God's sake, stay off Twitter. Musk doesn't need your money. So I'll leave you with all of that. Appreciate you coming on. And I'll talk to you again next week. Sláinte. Thank you for listening to the show today. I hope you enjoyed it and you'll return again for another episode of The Village Oak Tree. Please like, subscribe, and reply on the YouTube videos or the audio podcast where that's available. This helps with spreading the word about what I'm trying to do, like so many others, which is to shout about all the bad things our governments are doing to us all over the world. If enough of us decide that we don't want to take it anymore, we can force the governments to do right by us as we elected them to do. As I say goodbye this week, I wish to leave you with this Irish blessing as you go about your day. May your hand always be stretched out in friendship and never in want. Slán go fóill.